Welcome to the Deadology Podcast from Pencil Hill Studio, New Paltz, New York. I'm your host, Howard Weiner. This is Season 2, Episode 34 of the podcast. And today is September 26, 2024. It was recently the anniversary of a memorable Grateful Dead show at the Philly Spectrum, September 23rd, 1987. That and a lot of Bob Dylan will be the topic of this episode. I got a longtime friend joining me. He's a New Paltz guy. We went to college in New Paltz. He's from Framingham, Massachusetts. His name is Phil Hyman. This guy has a great ear for music. And let me tell you how I met him, and then we'll get into the phone call with Phil and all the insanity of just being into the Grateful Dead and Bob Dylan. So I met Phil at Rockland Community College. I think the year was 1985. We're in a hacky sack circle kicking that thing around, and all of a sudden he started talking to me. I'm like, Jesus, this guy knows his stuff, man. He's got an ear for music. We were talking about different hot versions of Grateful Dead songs, and this was such a cool time period, man. Rockland Community College, Suffern, New York. Tons of Deadheads. I met lifelong friends there, and Paul Blatt, Ricky Barrett, just so many people, man. It was an incredible time, and I was like, there's something about this guy Phil, man. He thinks like I think when we listen to music. And I think the first shows he went with me to were the summer 1985. His friend Paul was joining us, Doug was there, and so we invite Phil along, and Jerry Garcia said the Grateful Dead were the last great American road experience, something to that effect. And it was so true, man. All of us who were out on tour in those days, it was just, you knew you were in something insane. You didn't realize it was the last, but I think Garcia kind of really understood that at the time. And what happened on this tour, man, just bonds people forever. I think I covered this in like the third episode of the podcast from Season 1. It was like such an influential tour, that Summer 85 tour. You're on the road, you're getting arrested, you're facing death, 100-degree weather, and it doesn't matter because the freaking music and the experience is so great. It's just, it's beautiful, man. So you need a little pain with a little pleasure, So the Grateful Dead tour has always combined the both of them, and it made people friends for life. So me and Phil finished that tour. We went to see a show at the Brendan Byrne Arena, a couple of shows on that November 85 tour. We decided, Rockland Community College, you can only go there for 2 years. I managed to get 3 or 4 out of it. But we decided we had to move on to another college, New Paltz, New York, man, City, New Paltz. I don't know what Phil's motivation for going there was, but to me, it was the best party school and the easiest to get into. So I'm all about New Paltz. We moved into a place on Route 32 for our first semester, and there was a day that changed my life forever. Phil tried to get me into Dylan. He kind of introduced it to me. But this time, we were both so crazy with the Grateful Dead. It was like all we did was listen to Dead tapes. He tried to mix in some Dylan, but I kind of vetoed anything. It wasn't vetoing Dylan. Anything that wasn't the Grateful Dead was getting vetoed, pretty much. Until one day in 1986, and I think at this point, I'll bring Phil in, and our Zoom call will take it from this point. All right. Hey, proud to have my friend Phil join us on the Deadology podcast. Phil, are you there?
I am here, Howard. Reading you loud and clear, my friend.
Beautiful, man. Good to hear from you, man. We're going to pick this right up, but we got a bunch of stuff to get to. The Dead Show from 9/23/87. But I want to kick it off with a day in April 1986. Probably drank a little the night before. We're in New Paltz, living in a house on North Chestnut Street, and my car was in the shop. I had to borrow your car to go get a cup of coffee. So I get into your car, one more cup of coffee for the road. So I get into your car, and I push in a tape. I figure it's a dead tape. It's got to be a dead tape. But it's Tangled Up in Blues playing. I'm like, all right, cool. I know Dylan, and I go to the coffee store. Now, here's your first, maybe the only trivia question for you. What was the name of the store that I went to? I'm throwing you a little.
the real name or what we called it?
Well, that would be
McDetty's.
McDetty's, yes. Yes, indeed. There was three correct answers. The real name was McPeaty's. McDetty's is what we called it, and we called it McDuty's occasionally, but McDetty's. So this place, this place, McDetty's, man, that the coffee, it was like, wow, it was black muddy Joe. You drink a cup of this coffee, you go out and build a pyramid. It was like it was dangerous coffee. So I get my cup of coffee, and I'm heading back up 32. This store was only about 2 minutes from our house, and I'm listening to the tape. I was surprised it wasn't a dead tape, and another Dylan song plays that I know, Simple Twist of Fate, but I never heard the Dylan version before. I flipped out. I'm like, what? It was like the most exquisite thing. It just blew me away. Like, there are days that change your life and little car rides that change your life. I heard that Simple Twist of Fate. I'm like, this is fucking nuts, man. I love this. It just hit me out of nowhere. Like I like Dylan and stuff, but it was, I never heard this album before. Then the next song, You're a Big Girl Now. I never heard the song before, yep. But instantly, bam, it connected. I'm like, this is such a great album. I can't wait to get more Dylan albums. Then I heard Idiot Win, the masterpiece, and I couldn't believe it. At this point, I'm in Phil's car. What kind of car did you have? Was it brown?
Oldsmobile Cutlass, I think.
Wow.
Oldsmobile Cutlass, yeah.
It was a light brown car. I don't know. So I'm practically in Kingston. I don't have a cell phone to tell him that I have his car. I'm taking it for a drive because I'm listening to the tape. I came back, rewound the four songs. I was freaking in love with Dylan at that point. Do you remember me coming through the door and screaming, "What's the name of that album?" Or do you remember that day?
I don't remember it, but I now, you know, I've heard you tell the story and I've read it in your books that, yeah, I mean, it went something like that. And I'm just going to backtrack just a little bit how then I shared this house, and, you know, we had the connection with the dead. But when we first moved in, I was a big Dylan fan. He not so much. And I remember one day I was probably, I'm guessing around that time, I'm probably playing Infidels because I'm really big into Infidels. And I'm sorry to say, my friend, but he said to me, "Get that crap off."
Of course. Anything that wasn't dead was crap.
Exactly. So, yeah. So, I mean, it was obviously, I knew that it wouldn't take much, or it wouldn't be long because of all the, you know, the Garcia adulation of Dylan. But yeah, so you came from that day of get this crap off to hijacking my car and almost driving it. Canada. So yeah, that was your epiphany.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. And I went out and bought every cassette tape that Dylan, within 2 weeks I owned every cassette tape. That's what we used to do with not albums at that time. It was around when CDs started coming out, man, but I went out and bought every Dylan tape and I was in love. But let's get back to the Grateful Dead, man. So we were both huge into the Dead. That was like there was no yes. We're on the same page there. So at this house, man, we would have people over. We would impress them with tunes. We'd play stuff for them, and occasionally we would throw furniture out the door. Yeah, we just couldn't play. We couldn't just play songs for people. We had to, like, you know, show how much we love the music, man. Like, I remember one day we threw a recliner out the front door during the Minglewood from 828-82. I know you're a big fan of that one. And you remember the day?
Vanita, yeah.
Crazy. We remember the day we were swing dancing to the Big Railroad Blues from Worcester. It was like 2 degrees outside. We're on the front lawn.
84. I think I did a somersault on the hard ground. Yeah. I think one of the things that started that crazy, those crazy antics we had at that house was, if you remember this, there's a night that I think somebody gifted you Beers of the World. And it was like a 24 pack or a 30 pack of, like, just all kinds of crazy beers. And, you know, of course, we probably plowed through them all. And that's probably when we ended up, you know, dancing jigs to Big Railroad Blues. But yeah, I remember Beers of the World.
Yeah, that was great. It was like a first experience away from, well, for me, it was like, actually living somewhere else. But Newport's, what a great town, man. What a, and so that's where our Grateful Dead Dylan journey began. And there was so much more to go. But I think your next stop after we're in that house for a while, you moved to Pencil Hill Road, 20 Pencil Hill Road.
20 Pencil Hill.
Oh my
20
God.
Pencil Hill. Yeah.
And obviously the we I broadcast from Pencil Hill Studios. It's Pencil Hill has made like a huge impact on my life. We were nuts back then, man. So we used to, I think we Perry and the Lost Boys, we used to invite them up, this Grateful Dead band. And Phil was the first person to live in this house. We had, well, not the first person to live there, the first person to take full advantage of this stage, So
Yeah.
we had the Lost Boys up there, and these were the greatest parties ever, man. These guys would play mostly Grateful Dead, and hundreds of people would show up. Yeah, what was, say something about the White House parties, man. Those were great.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the first one I did. Yeah, it was small. I mean, it was word of mouth. I think we had like five kegs, and they played. I think they played for beer, and I mean, I don't think we gave them any money and everything. But it was a great time. And then because I think they Lost Boys ended up playing up in New Paltz, long after I was out of there. But I probably had it a couple times a year, and it got to the point where it was insane, and we just
Yeah.
had like the whole town would show up. But I remember. Back then we didn't have the smartphones with the weather apps and all that stuff. And I remember one day I was going to have it. It was supposed to rain, and
The tent.
some guy up there, he went with me over the mountain, and we got some tent. We set up this massive tent in the yard, and it turned out to be a beautiful day. But yeah, those parties were absolutely insane. And
Yeah.
then you carried on the tradition after I moved out of the house.
Yeah. And then it led to arrests,
Incredible
civil
times.
unrest in the town. And these were the part people
Yes.
got married at these parties and had kids. We definitely, the Grateful Dead inspired the whole thing, and the Lost Boys played great times. But one other thing about Pencil Hill, this was, now we're leading to the Grateful Dead show at the Spectrum, September 23rd, 1987. I know you weren't at the Garden show 9/18/87 with the great Morning Dew, but I got the tape from Doug Schmell that. The next day I was at his house, and I remember we went back to your place before the Philly show, and we heard the Morning Dew with a bunch of people. We nearly knocked the house off its foundation, and it was just hearing that Morning Dew. We were so excited about everything that was going on with the Grateful Dead, man. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I was just, looking back at it. Yeah, it was. I didn't realize this was only 5 days, about 4 or 5 days
5 days after, yeah.
5 days after the Garden show. It's just something else I'm thinking about with these is, I think the Garden run was three or four shows,
Yeah, it was
three
three,
shows
four,
maybe.
five, something like that.
Yeah, I went
Couple two,
to.
three, four, five.
Yeah, I mean, I went to one show, and it was the 18th, and it was the absolutely
Oh, you
monumental.
went to the 18th. I didn't even realize
Oh my God. Oh,
that.
100% I was there. Oh my God. Yeah, I was there. I couldn't believe it. Like At that point, to be honest with you, I think I was probably winding it down with seeing a lot of Dead shows.
Yeah.
After, Garcia's getting sick, and the Touch of Grey stuff and the popularity. But yeah, that I mean, obviously the 18th at the Garden was insane. In fact, I remember, my girlfriend at the time, Jannie, is the one who said to us, "Hey, I think I can get us tickets for Philly." And we were like, "Yeah, of course," because we just came off the Garden show, and I think it was the three of us went down there. I just remember we had an insane time. I forget exactly where we stayed at one of the colleges or something, like
Yeah, it was
Villanova. We stayed with
a
somebody at
temple, I think.
Temple.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. And I think after the show, I think we were like sneaking around at night, like tiptoeing through like monasteries or something. It was like insane. It was
Hanging out with
insane.
John
We're,
Chaney, the head coach
yeah,
of Temple.
we're, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember that show was, I went back and listened to it yesterday. I look back on the later 80s and stuff and into 90s, and I don't have a good I didn't see a lot of Dead shows. I don't really think back super fondly, I guess, but this show was good. I mean, it had a lot of energy. Bobby Garcia had come back and was, I think, was pretty healthy, was pretty clean.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing Actually, the I think it was the first shows back on the East Coast after he got sick. I think it was Hartford in like March of '87. They were real good shows.
Oh, definitely. There was a great Music Never Stopped at one of those shows, and
Yeah, and shout out, I went with one of our old buddies, Paul Blatt, to those shows. We had great
Paul.
seats. And then we did the summer thing with the Dead. So yeah, I mean, these shows were very, very enjoyable and lots of energy, and it was we had a blast at that show.
Yeah. Hey, but before we talk about the show, I just want to mention one funny thing whenever I think of that Philly show. We saw like the first primitive Shakedown Street where a bunch of vendors got together. May not have been the first one, but it was kind of like the beginnings of Shakedown. And I remember walking through, we called it Lover's Lane. It was like this little, that was like, there was like 20 vendors together. They were lined up and they created like a little row. It was pretty funny, man. And we were kind of laughing, having a good time at the show. And that was really one of the first shakedowns. There was like 20 vendors, one, 10, like 10 vendors on one side, 10 on the other. And we went down that lane, man. It was like, that was the beginning of the shakedown pretty much. But hey, let's talk about the music or
Yeah, I
the,
mean, I'm
go ahead.
yeah, absolutely. No, no,
Yeah.
no, no. Go, 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 go.
Oh, September 23rd, 1987, man. So Stranger, you said you liked the Franklins a lot when you heard it on tape again.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Help on the Way,
Yeah,
Slipknot, and
much I love that. Yeah.
but they weren't playing it, right? So you get your Franklin, you take it. But I just thought, Feel Like a Stranger. I know through the 80s can be hit or miss. It can be okay, and it can be fabulous. I thought this one was like pretty spot on. I know we enjoyed it. So I
Yeah.
think Franklin's just carried the
That's a great.
I think that I think the there was a lot of energy through the first the first set, really, or even into the second set. I think there was a lot of like big positive energy. And I was actually thinking is with the Garden show, there's an energy that the Northeast brings that they don't get a lot of other places, and the
Yeah.
band definitely connects with that.
Especially
And I think
Garcia
that's,
really got
yeah.
into that. Yeah, he was like moved by the crowd for sure. And Touch of Grey was like the hit song, so there was such optimism at the shows. It was crazy. So you got to Feel Like a Stranger, Franklin's. It was the first time I ever saw those two songs as an opener, so we're excited. Walking Blues, might be a peg below Rooster and CC Rider. I don't know how you feel about that tune, but it was a good little tune.
A spot on.
Yeah.
Spot on. I would rather have a Rooster or a CC
Yeah.
Rider. Yep.
And then they played Friend of the Devil, not the best version. Of course, you love seeing Friend of the Devil. And then Tons of Steel. I tell you, man, like this Tons of Steel, it's okay. The album version from In the Dark, that's a beautiful, like they did a great job with that Tons of Steel, I thought. And I don't think they ever played it great in concert, but the one from In the Dark is brilliant. And that was also another cool thing. Like they came in, they were conquering, man. They had In the Dark, everything was great. But after Tons of Steel, this is where the show changed, and especially for me, man, that Desolation Row. What do you think about the version of Desolation Row?
Well, I mean, obviously, huge fan of Dylan, and hearing that their expanding repertoire of Dylan songs, and that hey, Desolation Row, that's a tough one to tackle. It's a
Yeah.
long song, a lot of lyrics, and yeah, I mean, I listened to it again, and Weir is really into it. He's been, they're into it. They're into it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how long they had been playing that at that point. I don't think that long. Maybe
No.
they start at like 85.
85, 86, something like that. I remember the first time I
Yeah.
saw it, it was boring to me. Because I hadn't had my Dylan revelation yet. I didn't know the song. But this version is nuts, man. I'm gonna play a good portion of this version at the end of our. I'm not gonna interrupt our talk right now to play it, but I'm gonna play it at the end. My favorite version of Desolation Row by the Dead. I think we're so into it. Jerry, he was famous long ago when playing electric violin on Desolation Row. He does a great solo, and we're so into it, man. It's a movie. It's a video waiting to happen. I'm very pumped about that Desolation Row. I've listened to it many times, and they at this point the show just took off because you got the Big Railroad Blues next. That never fails to please. Do you remember being at the show for that one?
Yeah, Big Railroad was it was up there. I mean, I've seen. I mean, I know that the famous one that I saw in Syracuse that you missed because your brother's bar mitzvah.
Yes.
But yeah, no, this big railroad, it was packed. I mean,
Yeah.
Garcia brought it. He was into it. You could just tell. I mean, you could tell through the set that he was into it.
Yeah.
Big energy. And yeah, I mean, big railroad, if it's that or Row Jimmy, I'm taking a big railroad every time.
Yeah. And then the it's all escalation. You got the Desolation Row, Big Railroad Blues, and then the song that we wanted to hear, man. Fucking when they broke, when you hear that bass beat from Music Never Stop, man. We knew that they were going to smoke it just because everything was exactly right at that point.
Yeah, and they did smoke it. I remember. I think that, when Garcia was ratcheting it up in the jam, I think that you smacked the guy in front of you. He smacked his hood. He had
I
a
flipped
hoodie. You
his hood up.
smacked
There
his
was,
hoodie up on his head or something.
there was no violence. It was all love. It's,
It was
hey,
all love, but it was
hey.
all love. But yeah, it was. Look at. We came a long way. We would listen to jams and throw furniture out in the street. Now all we're doing is flipping hoodies up on the guy's head. So, maturity there, I think.
Yeah, we definitely matured to some extent. Hey, but that music has never stopped. It was insane. So let's listen to the jam, and then we'll get back to talking about that night in Philly, and then Dylan's Never Ending Tour.
We'll be back in just a little bit.
All right, and then Bob Weir says, "And we'll be back for more," as if that the show was over. That was so freaking good they could have left the stage, and it's true they could have left the stage, man. What a hot jam! Garcia just goes off
Thought
on
it was
that.
up.
It's like a two-tiered thing
He
he does
does.
at the end, which is just, he just raises like the highest point on that. It's incredible, man. One of the best musics.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, absolutely awesome. I know that we were going nuts when we were there. Listening to it again is fantastic. Again, I just have this probably unfair memory of like Later Dead that Garcia was like kind of down in the mix and just sort of like, you know, yeah, whatever, stepping along. But this is like just full force. He's all out.
Yeah, that's why the end of this first set stands out for me, because you got the Desolation Row, Big Railroad. Desolation Row, Music Never Stopped, are two noteworthy versions that you got to listen to. They're incredible. So that alone made it a great show. In 87, you were looking for anything. If you could get two spectacular songs, yeah, you know, you were happy. It was a great show. And the weird thing was, like, Jerry would take a song like Music and he would play it better than he had in years. But then other songs suffered. You know, it was like it was a mixed bag. So I totally understand what you're saying. Now, the second set, I didn't think a whole lot. When I listened back to it, I was like, okay, this is why I don't listen to it a lot. So I'll read off the songs because it's a totally enjoyable set list. Bertha, Cumberland, playing Uncle John's, back into a little playing, drums, obviously Space, I Need a Miracle, Dear Mr. Fantasy, Round and Round, Good Lovin', La Bamba, Good Lovin', that was the last La Bamba ever, and U.S. Blues. What do you think when you listen to it?
Well, I like Bertha Cumberland out of the gates.
Yeah.
You know, obviously I want to hear, you know, we want to hear Scarlet Fire or something like that. But you know what? Back then, my fear was they played Scarlet until like Touch of Grey, and I'd be like disappointed. So
Scarlet's Bertha Cumberland. Great back then. Yeah.
You know, I thought Jerry. Yeah, and I thought you know Jerry brought these two songs pretty good. Post drums, there's no Garcia. There's no Garcia songs. You know, Miracle Fantasy, Round Around, Good. So La Bamba, you got a couple. Yeah. But which is, you know, we got more than could be expected out of them through the first, you know, 10 or 12 songs. So, nothing memorable. But, you know, first set, you know, it was a good show. And I don't think it was probably.
We had so much fun during that second set. That's when you're at the show, you have a spectacular time. But when you don't have to listen to the tape again, it was kind of, but the end of that first set, like in 87 and in those years after that, if you got two or three smoking songs, it was a success, you know. And sometimes you didn't even get that. Quickly, we're going to go to 1988. We're going to skip ahead almost a full year. Do you remember that Madison Square Garden show we were at where they did, they opened up the second set with Not Fade Away?
No, I actually don't.
It was the one where we were waltzing around. I'm not surprised, you know, because we didn't love the show.
Well, that was definitely not even the beginning of the end for me, but it was winding down for my dead shows. I actually didn't even know I went to a show at that run.
Yeah.
So
you were with me.
What was the date?
It was September 18th. It was the anniversary of the Madison Square Garden show. So we came in sky high hopes, but that particular tour, it was like, I think it was like a nine show run. I saw maybe five or six of them, and maybe two of them were decent. It was a weird run. They were not good at that Madison Square Garden run. That tells you a lot, because they always play great in Madison Square Garden. So the only reason I bring that up is not to be a bummer, but we had another supplement, Bob Dylan's Never Ending Tour, man. That was in October of 88. That's when he came out with the Traveling Wilburys with Harrison and Jeff Lynne and Tom Petty, Roy Orbison. It was incredible. So it was like a rebirth for Bob Dylan. And he was now playing different songs on different nights. And that kind of supplemented, instead of the Grateful Dead kind of going to see Dylan, took over that for us. Do you remember the first shows you saw in, what was it, Homedale, Garden State Performing Arts Center? I don't remember the
again,
songs
I'm
either.
Say no, but I just know that at this time. So you know, Dylan did, you know, 86 with Petty, but on the same ticket as the Dead, and then 87 obviously with the Dead. He changed. I mean, and you know, he all of a sudden became, you know, he started the Never Ending Tour, which maybe literally went on for whatever 20 years. Yeah. He became a must-see. I mean, he learned he from the Dead. I was looking at the run that he did with the Dead that summer with five or six shows. Like every set list was completely different. He didn't open up the same thing. And I think you know, maybe Garcia's love of Dylan's songbook might have opened up Dylan's eyes to say, you know, hey, I got some good stuff here. Let's dig in. So yeah, I think I started, and you were too. I started seeing Dylan a lot more, 88, 89. That funny show with the funny one when I was coming to, I was already left New Paltz and I was coming up to party and I stopped.
Before you mention that, let me just intro that one for you. It was like, I think it was like 1989 or 90. I was throwing a big party with the Lost Boys at my house. You went to a show in Connecticut. Continue. Dylan's show in Connecticut.
Yeah. So it was at, I think it was at Western Connecticut State University. It was a little stage with like a moat around it. And I was like right in front, and Dylan was sitting there playing, and he was so spot on. He was so awesome. And the funniest thing was, last song of the second set, I think last song of the main set, he's playing like a Rolling Stone, I think. And there saunters some, you know, robust girl up onto the stage who sauntered right over next to him and started singing, and he just shut it down, left, no encore. And I forget who said it, the famous line, "The fat lady has sung."
Yep. Oh, you're almost totally politically correct, my friend. Robust.
Did I? Robust. Well, I'm trying.
Yeah.
I have a teenage daughter who will correct me everything I say, so I got to be very careful.
Yep. That's the way it is these days. So the Dylan Never Ending Tour, it was so exciting, man, because we never really followed Dylan's, but he was playing smaller places. It was so cool. We saw the Garden State Performing Arts Center. We were with King Sackett. You were with King Sackett that night. And I came back the next night. And then I saw a bunch of shows at Radio City. 1989, that was a huge year for us, man. Oh Mercy came out. And that was my first original album of original Dylan songs since I had been converted to Dylan. And it blew us away. And I waited online at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center for tickets. I got first row tickets for Dylan. I got 6 front row tickets. It's amazing when you get paid off, when you wait online. You're the first idiot online, and you actually get the front row tickets, man. It's beautiful. And then I got my picture in the Poughkeepsie Journal. It said, "Oh, Mercy."
Yeah, with the tickets. Yeah.
Hey, do you remember that show from
You know what? I certainly do. And we were going to go get the tickets together, and I just shut the alarm off, and you went like a trooper and scored a bunch of seats. I mean, we were front row, dead center. He was awesome. He was awesome. Yeah. He was at the peak right at that point. And, that was who went with us. I
King, Blaze, Doug Barthel. Throw out a couple of names from the past. There had to be one other person. Yeah.
Well, so, speaking of King and speaking of Dylan, when I first got to New Paltz in 1986, you know, it's in September and the weather's changing and I'm on campus and there's this dude I've seen a couple of times. And I said to him, "Wintertime is coming." And he said, "The windows are filled with frost." And that's 40 years later. And I'm going to his birthday bash next
60th
month. So
party, man.
There you go.
It's going to be great, man. That's amazing. I don't even remember that. Yep. You probably told me that story, but I don't even remember that. It's pretty cool, man. And here's another trivia question for you. Who moved into King's apartment?
Yep.
That was me. I moved into 50 South Chestnut, and then we made the Pencil Hill journey. Amazing year. So then we saw him at the Mid-Hudson. I saw a bunch of great shows at the Beacon Theater, the October 13th show where Dylan walked off the stage, went out the side exit door. Nobody knew what was happening. Incredible show. We saw a great one. RPI. Do you remember that?
I was just going to say that to you. Houston Fieldhouse at RPI. I think we were Scott Dwyer.
We were there with Scotty?
I think so.
Wow.
I do remember that. I do remember that show. Another fantastic show. My brother went to RPI, so I kind of was, you know, I knew. That's why I knew the name. That's why I know the name of the building to this day. I don't memorize all the arenas and different schools. But yes, the Houston Fieldhouse.
Yeah.
I do remember that show.
I think he played Conceited Disease. I remember we were cracking up, making up the lyrics to Disease of Conceit.
It's a tongue twister.
Yeah. Hey, so just Dylan was doing everything, man. He was doing the new stuff from his new album, pulling out old songs. When you have a repertoire like Dylan's, man, you can put on a hell of a show. And he was just wild back then. He wanted to join the Grateful Dead in 1989. And the person in Dead was having none of it. he got vetoed by one person.
And that was who? Weir?
No. Weir was all.
Oh,
in.
Phil Lesh.
Yeah, probably Phil Lesh. We don't know 100%.
Gotta be.
Hey, but it was.
Yeah,
it
we
was,
don't know. I got.
Good.
I got another Dylan show for you, and you remember this one up in New Hampshire at the baseball field.
Oh my God, that was great. That's jumping ahead a few years. What was that like 2004? Yeah. That was probably. Like,
oh no. Is it that late?
Yeah. It was definitely after 9/11.
Okay. I don't know why that, but it was you, me, and Rich Zupan, and it was crazy. It was in Manchester, New Hampshire, and they have like a hotel overlooking the ballpark in left field. And we went, hung out with you, were on the balcony drinking beers and everything. We went out to the show. It poured
all day.
The entire show. But Dylan like put on a great show, and he was so appreciative of all of us. And at the end of the show, when they were like taking their bow, remember what he was doing?
Throwing the pixie dust. All right, Phil, thanks for joining us here on the Deadology podcast. Unfortunately, our Zoom call ran out. And I think what Phil was saying there at the end, we're talking about that Manchester Dylan show. So Dylan, after playing the final encore, I believe it was Like a Rolling Stone and All Along the Watchtower, stepped to the front of the stage with his band as usual. They would stoically line up behind him and they'd take bows. On this night, Dylan took off his top hat, reached into his top hat, and appeared to throw some kind of mystery dust at the audience as if he was sprinkling pixie dust at them. With some kind of mysterious dust in there. Who knows? It could have been apple seeds. You know, he was doing his Johnny Appleseed thing. But it was really a funny kind of tribute to the people who were out there in the rain all day. He was kind of amazed that everybody hung in for the show. And let me just, this was August 27th, 2006 in Manchester. Let me just go over that day a little bit, because it was an incredible show, one of the most memorable Dylan shows. So I think Junior Brown opened, and then Jimmy Vaughn was after that. It was, you know, the minor league ballpark tour. And then it was raining. It was raining back then. It was foggy. There was no chance of any let up in the rain. It just got a little worse as the day and night proceeded. But by the time Dylan came on, it was pounding rain. So we're out there in ponchos. And obviously it was a smaller crowd than you usually expect at a Dylan show, because there were going to be no walk-ups on this night, man. It was the type of night you're like, hey, let's go to the Dylan show in the middle of the torrential rain. If you didn't have tickets, you weren't there. I'm sure even people who had tickets gave up. So Dylan's playing for a pretty small crowd. But man, he went overboard. You know, you would figure it'd be the type of night he might pack it in a couple songs early. Nobody would have blamed him. But he went in the other direction. He gave it his all. You know, he's like, look at these people out here in the rain. And he actually had so much fun that night. And crazy, it was just the craziest thing, because there's the Manchester airport's right next to this stadium. So all night, planes were coming out of the clouds, and they looked so scarily close to the stage. So you would see planes coming out of the clouds, just appearing out of nowhere right over the stage. It was really a bizarre spectacle. And as the show went along, it was raining harder and harder. Of course, Dylan did A Hard Rain's Gonna Fall. Some other songs, I remember Cats in the Well opener, You Ain't Going Nowhere. Such a tremendous performance from Dylan. He gave it his all on that night, as he usually did on the never-ending tour. What a performer he is, and thankfully he had that Grateful Dead experience in 87, and it kind of put him on the right path, and the never-ending tour. So, by the way, if you like some of these stories with me and Phil, and in my book, Tangled Up in Tunes, which is available on Amazon and my website, tangledupintunes.com. I have a lot of these Dead touring days from when I first started in 81, 82, 83, right into the never-ending tour. That was a major part of my touring life. I went on to see about 120 Dylan shows over the years, and none of it would have been possible if it weren't for the Grateful Dead, in my case for sure, because I never would have been a big tour person unless I had done it with the Grateful Dead. Dylan enabled me to kind of keep my passion going, following music around all over the United States, Amsterdam, all those, went to Mexico City to see Dylan once. That was an incredible journey, great part of my life. And hey, thanks for listening. Oh, one more thing before we go, that 92387, which was kind of the featured show, that was like the height of optimism, because the Dead had that great year In the Dark, the Touch of Grey video, and the Great Morning Dew, that second set at Madison Square Garden, and then you got this great Desolation Row, and the music never stopped from this Philly show. We were on top of the world. We thought the Dead would get better every year. Things were trending in the right direction. But unfortunately, 87 was about as good as it got. I know they had a good tour or two in 1989. But thankfully, they were around because they brought their music to a new generation of deadheads over the last through 1995. And wow, man, that it's just continued on incredibly into the year 2024. It's just amazing how popular the Dead are, how they're like mainstream popular culture now. And thankfully we had all those great shows, and Jerry made a comeback, because if he would have passed away at that point, who knows exactly what the Grateful Dead legacy would be, but it wouldn't be as huge as it is now. So it was a blessing that we got Jerry and the Dead for 9 more years after the coma. Was it 9 more years? Yeah, 9 more years. And thanks for listening again. I think I'll be back next week. I have an engagement. I'm going to a guitar camp. I don't play guitar, but the musicians are going to be there. Are going to be incredible. They're going to be jamming, so I might be busy next week. I'll try to get a podcast out. If not, I'll definitely be back next week. And as promised for the outro here, we're going to listen to a good chunk of the Desolation Row from Philly 92387. I think you're really going to, if you don't know it, you're going to really enjoy this. It's an amazing performance from the Grateful Dead. And once again, I'm your host, Howard Weiner. Thanks for listening. Peace out.
Keys, the cards that read, have mercy on his soul.
drive on Desolation Road. Now at midnight, all the agents and the superhuman crew coming round of everyone who knows more than they do. Then they take them to the factory with a heart attack machine strapped across their shoulders. And then the kerosene is brought down from the castles by insurance men who go to make sure nobody's escaping to Desolation Road. Ah, praise be to Nero's Neptune. The Titanic sails at dawn. Everybody's shouting, which side are you on? There's a pound in T.S. Eliot. They're fighting in the Countess Tower. Apocalypse singers laugh at them and fishermen hold flowers. Between the wind and the sea, where the mermaids blow, nobody has to think too much about Desolation Road. Yes, I received. Doorknob broke when he asked how I was doing. Was that some kind of joke? All these people that you mentioned, yes, I know them, they're quite lame. I had to rearrange their faces, give them all another name. Right now I can't read to them. Bail them from Desolation Road.